Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Elevated Places with Dr. Ava Muhammad. Dr. Ava is a gifted attorney, researcher, lecturer, and author of 5 books. She received her Juris Doctorate from Georgetown University and is a member of the New York Bar Association. Dr. Ava has been featured in Essence magazine many times and was named by Essence as being one of America's most powerful black women. Dr. Ava is also a student national spokesperson for the Nation of Islam and the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan.
Have you noticed that there was a time that black people could find refuge in France? Many musicians and entertainers went there, and the French saw them as a novelty, and they felt as though they were really accepted more than they were accepted in their own country. Do you remember after colonialism died, many of those that England colonized began to move to England, and at first it was a novelty. Here are brothers and sisters from the former colonies in the Caribbean, from the former colonies in Africa, from the former colonies in Asia and the Isles of the Pacific. Yes, and you were accepted. What's happening today? As Caucasians begin to feel threatened and their security is compromised, the mask of civility comes off, and then you see murder coming out of their hearts and their eyes. It is the same in France. It is the same in Belgium. It is the same in Norway and Sweden and Finland and Denmark. It is the same in Germany and in Russia, all over our planet. The hatred of black is manifesting.
The Elevated Places call-in number is 347-324-5091. Or visit us on our radio show page at blogtalkradio.com/Elevated Places. And now, here is your host, Dr. Ava Muhammad.
Assalamu alaikum. Peace be unto you. I am your sister, Ava Muhammad, and I want to welcome you to Elevated Places. It is a blessing during the blessed month of Ramadan to be with you again. And we expect tonight to have a very pointed, very forthright, and in-depth discussion in accord with Minister Farrakhan's continuing message, the time and what must be done. The excerpt that you just heard from Minister Farrakhan was lifted from episode 27 of The Time and What Must Be Done. And I thank Brother Bobby Muhammad for choosing that excerpt, because nothing could be more true than the minister's statement that hatred of black is being made manifest. It is very disheartening, even though we should have known historically, and certainly the intellect would understand, that we could have expected nothing different from an all-white jury or a five white, one black or Hispanic, still unclear, member of the jury, but we had five white females on a six-person jury, And so we could expect nothing out of Sanford, Florida with such a jury other than what we got, which was a complete and total acquittal. Michael Vick was incarcerated for 2 years because dogs were killed on his property. He was not even present. The same prosecutor, Angela Corey, who was in charge of the Zimmerman case, is the same prosecutor who successfully argued and obtained a conviction. And I don't have it in front of me, but the sister's name we will address later. She is doing 20 years for shooting a ceiling. 20 years for shooting a ceiling. She did not point at anyone and miss, but she fired a warning shot into the ceiling because her estranged and violent husband was threatening her, and she is incarcerated as we speak. And so she's doing 20 years for shooting a ceiling. Michael Vick did 2 years because some animals were unfortunately killed on his property. But George Zimmerman, a predator, targeted, stalked, terrified, and ultimately murdered a 17-year-old high school junior and walked out of the courtroom last Saturday night. And so we're going to deal with that this evening. And we have always maintained on Elevated Places that the words of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad are true, the words of Minister Louis Farrakhan are true, that separation is the best, and now we see it is the only solution. And I'm comforted so much and so appreciative and thankful to Allah that I'm joined this evening by two strong and brilliant brothers, my co-host, Brother Terrence Muhammad, and our Elevated Places analyst and contributor, the Minister of Agriculture for the Nation of Islam, Dr. Rizzi Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum, my dear brothers.
Wa alaikum
assalam, sister.
All right. Thank you all so much for flanking me this evening. And I want the listeners to know we have a special two-hour edition of Elevated Places. We are live on blogtalkradio.com/Elevated Places. Call us at 347-324-5091. People are queuing up already to get in the discussion. So get on the line so you can have your place, because there's going to be a lot of competition, and we're going to do our best to include everyone because we want and need everyone's insight. We are also very humbled and honored to be streaming live in Waterloo, Iowa, on WKBOL 100.1 FM, thanks to the efforts of Brother Michael Muhammad, who also carries the Time series by Minister Farrakhan every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Central. And Michael Muhammad himself has his own show, Torchlight, 11:30 a.m. Central, 12:30 p.m. Eastern, every Friday. Brother Terrence Muhammad, we are so pleased that you are stationary in an undisclosed location. We want you to give us your observations about the activities and what you think the people need to know. Coming up, listeners, callers, participants, we're going to be joined, Allah willing, by Uncle Bobby Johnson, the uncle of our beloved brother Oscar Grant. And most of you know that a feature film, Fruitvale Station, has been released dealing with the tragic story of Oscar Grant. And so Brother Uncle Bobby, who has been with us before, will be joining us this evening to discuss not only the film, but to get his insight on the verdict in the Zimmerman case, and also to talk to us about how the family is doing. We're going to start off, Brother Terrence, what's going on?
Well, first I would like to say to all the listening Muslim audience, Ramadan Mubarak. We are
Ramadan
Kareem.
Yes, we are in that season of fasting and, you know, intense heat. And I think that is very appropriate for the condition that America is in right now. We're under some intense heat on this verdict of Trayvon Martin. But as you said, Dr. Ava, please, I implore everyone, do not miss, go back and listen to, grab hold of noi.org/the time, or go to YouTube and watch The Time and What Must Be Done. It comes on every Saturday at 6 p.m. Central, 7 p.m. Eastern, The Time and What Must Be Done, series by the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, coming up on lecture 28 of a 52-week series. You do not want to miss these powerful messages by the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan on The Time. Also, as I am the co-host, the host of Elevated Places is going to throw down this Sunday. You don't want to miss it. This Sunday at 10 a.m. Central, 11 a.m. Eastern at NOI.org. That's NOI.org. Subject, The Time and What Must Be Done. You do not want to miss this powerful message. And I'm saying that as a woman who's a scholar, a lawyer, a mother, you want to hear her words about this whole situation as we're going to discuss tonight. Also, our brother Abdul, that you hear on some of the webcasts on Sunday, will be in Charlotte, North Carolina, speaking on Stand Your Ground. Stand Your Ground, and he's been at the beautiful Church of Little Rock AME in Charlotte, North Carolina. So you want to check out our brother Abdul tomorrow night at 7 p.m. So to kind of go into some things, we are celebrating today the 95th birthday of our brother Mandela, who reportedly is getting better due to a lung infection. He's striving to get better. But we look at his life and we ponder the struggle that he went through. And I'm right now in Clinton, right outside of Knoxville, Tennessee, at Alex Haley's farm. I'm here with the Children's Defense Fund, and they're discussing nonviolent organizing, leadership for young people, and they've been talking about the Freedom Riders. They've been talking about the Children's March in Birmingham. And also, while I've been down here, I've been organizing for the March on Washington and the National Urban League Conference on next week. And I bring all of this up is because the state of America right now, we need, as the minister said, we have to save our youth. We're at that point where we have to have some Freedom Riders for Trayvon. We have to have some children's march or youth marches for the young people today, because what has happened to Trayvon is going all across the country. And I hear on Saturday at noontime there's going to be rallies all across the country at governmental plazas or where the city council or where the government meets, everywhere in the major cities and small cities of the United States, people will be rallying in support of our brother Trayvon Martin, which we'll be discussing tonight, as well as the case of Oscar Grant. But as I wrap up, we got to remember Trayvon is just the symbol of all of the Trayvons in the inner cities, all of the Oscar Grants in the inner cities that have been gunned down, tortured, or killed by an unjust system, not just by the hands of a gun, but through an educational, an economic system, and also a spiritual system that has killed and destroyed our young people. So those are the words for me tonight as we get ready to have a wonderful and powerful discussion. Make sure you get on Twitter and Facebook and let everybody know to tune in to Elevated Places tonight. It's going to be on fire.
Yes, it is. Brother Dr. Ridgely, before we get into the discussion, and in a few moments we're going to be bringing on Uncle Bobby to discuss our brother Oscar Grant, as Brother Terrence just said so pointedly that Trayvon is, I guess, the apex, his case is the apex of a long, long, horrific history here, an exercise in futility, the effort to get along in peace and harmony with the children of our slave masters. But we have to embrace and include all that have come before, and we've got to do something to bring an end to this. But we wanted to let you help us get a framework for tonight's discussion by giving us and perhaps reminding us, because you have been on this type of issue and the science in it for quite some time.
Well, Assalamu alaikum. Before I do that, something that's very ironic happened this past weekend, this past Saturday. I was up in North Alabama visiting Mr. Michael Stovall's farm, and we had a press conference about what the ongoing destruction of black farmers by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. He and others were up there, have been fighting for 20 years against the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and it's very ironic that on that same day, Trayvon's killer was let loose. But here you got the government doesn't want black farmers to farm, running their children out the farm into the cities where they can be gunned down and nobody cares. So it's very ironic from both ends of the spectrum, from where they ran us from off our property to where they ran us to and shot us down. This, I have to go back to the sheep, the sheepdog, and the evil shepherd analogy to help us understand why the jury, why it was set up to let Zimmerman go at this time. You see, the evil shepherd, which are the smart Jews and a few Gentile families with them, they are stealing and robbing the Gentiles. They're stealing and robbing from those they use as the sheepdogs to herd us, the sheep, the indigenous people of the planet. Well, every now and then, to keep the sheep dog in line and happy, you got to give him some mutton, other words, some raw meat. And so they give a young brother his raw meat for somebody to kill and shoot down, and then they let him off, and now the sheepdog smiles. He feels good. Now, the evil shepherd is the one who has been pushing integration. So he gets the sheep to try to integrate with the sheepdog, knowing that the sheepdog is going to retaliate. Then he gives the sheepdog someone to kill and lets him off, so the sheepdog feels good while the evil shepherd continues to bloodsuck him. This is the 100th anniversary of the Federal Reserve, the Anti-Defamation League, the IRS, and the FBI. They have ripped this country up. They have stolen its possessions through stealth, and they took away their wealth and gave us as a replacement, as a scapegoat, as a poor sacrificial lamb to these humans who act like dogs. So our brother Trayvon, it's hard to grasp what it was like for him to go through what he went through. And the fact that there were no burn marks on his clothing means that he was shot from a distance, shot down like a dog. Why? Just because he represented the black youth, the black people, like Minister Farrakhan has just pointed out. As long as there's one or two of us around, it's a novelty, we can entertain them. But statistics show when it gets to about 3 to 4% population in any area, here comes the discrimination, here comes retaliation, here comes brutality to keep us in line, to keep us in check, because they see us as their animals, their pets. Sometimes they're pets, but most of the time they're work animals. We're 3/5 and nothing has changed. We have got to decide what we're going to do. My cousin called me up last night and asked me what I thought about the Trayvon Martin case, and I said, join the Nation of Islam. I have no other solution.
Nothing else to say.
That's it. I mean, you know, that's no more talking, bro. You know, you can see now that these people have no intentions of living with us in peace. And they will not allow us to have peace. You can't go to the store and get you some Skittles and a drink without being shot, think you're in a war zone. And we made a mistake, and I'm going to close with this. We made a mistake after the 60s and the Civil Rights Movement by not teaching our children to be careful. We made our children think that there was a post-racial society and that you can walk around with your Skittles and not worry about it. We got to tell the truth about the history of this country to our youth so they can be watchful and be looking and wary about these white people who at any time can take off this masquerade of being human and show them their dog evil self and shoot you down and then get away with it.
See, that's why we're blessed to have you with us on Elevated Places, because when it is time to clear away the smoke screens and the politically correct language and just hear pure truth, you're the person to bring it. You're the person.
Well, all praise due to a lot. I know one thing. I am not politically correct.
No, you not at all.
Right.
Don't ever run for office until we're in our own territory. Now, brothers and sisters, you know, a feature film has just been released by a young director. The director of this film, Fruitvale Station, is only 27 years old. And this movie stars young actor Michael B. Jordan, who plays the role of 22-year-old Oscar Grant III. Oscar Grant III, on the early hours of New Year's Day of 2009, he was simply out to celebrate a new year coming in.
Mm.
And he, like Trayvon, like so many, was unarmed.
Mm.
He was shot in the back, and we'll go into a little further shortly, and killed, murdered, by a transit officer. They call it BART, Bay Area Rapid Transit System. Oscar, there had been some sort of altercation on the train, some confusion. And in all of that, he was arrested, and he was lying on the subway train platform, lying on his stomach, handcuffed. The officer who killed him claimed that he meant to taser him. I don't understand why he was trying to taser him since he was handcuffed on his stomach, prostrate on the ground.
What?
But he claimed he confused his taser for his gun.
Right.
And took his gun out and shot this young brother in the back and killed him. He died a few hours later. And the story just, again, represents our plight in white America. You know, they did have a trial. He did get convicted, not of murder, but I think manslaughter, and was sentenced to 2 years. Now, remember, Michael Vick got 2 years because some animals were killed on his property. He wasn't even present.
Come on.
But he did 2 years. And at the end of the day, this police officer received time served on this 2 year sentence.
Mm.
And, you know, Oscar Grant was 22, Trayvon had just turned 17, and we can see how the situation, just when when this happened to Oscar Grant, we thought it was as bad as it could get.
Come on.
And, you know, because it was such a slap in the face of the black community, that you could rob this young man of his life, rob his child of a father, and I've seen people do more time on shoplifting. Crack addicts You know, because the prisons are filled with drug users,
right.
Not dealers, users.
Right.
And so just when you think it can't get any worse, Saturday night rolls around this past Saturday, and George Zimmerman just walks out.
Hmm.
You know, if I went to a bar or someplace or even went in somebody's house and sat around and drank alcohol and got drunk and went out and got behind the wheel of a car and I'm driving under the influence and a pedestrian comes out in front of me, I don't see the pedestrian because I'm under the influence and I hit that person. You know, they call that criminally negligent homicide. And I can and should be incarcerated for that. But this man can openly declare war on a child. And we say openly because his conversation is available to us with the 911 dispatcher. But I'm not going to keep talking because we are so blessed, listeners and participants, to be joined by Oscar Grant's uncle, who has represented the family so beautifully and so effectively, not only for his nephew, but really for all of us, because of his willingness to stand up and speak out. And so he's with us tonight as Fruitvale Station has just been released, and to talk about his nephew's death, the film, and also we definitely want to hear his insight and views on the verdict in the Zimmerman trial. So, assalamu alaikum, peace be unto you, Brother Bobby. Welcome to Elevated Places, and thank you so much for taking time to be with us this evening.
Wa alaikum salam, Sister Ava, and I thank you for having me again here on your show.
Yes, sir.
Yes. So I'd like to fill in some details on the platform of what
yes,
happened.
Yes, please.
And then, of course, into the courtroom.
Right.
Of course, on that platform, as we know, Oscar was laying face down, hands behind his back. Johannes Mesny stands up, shoots Oscar in the back, and then immediately says that he thought Oscar had a gun. He repeated that statement to his counselor. I forget the counselor name, who also testified that he told him that he thought Oscar had a gun. He also had a police report that he had to fill out. And then that police report had asked about the details of what happened and why was the use of force used in the way that it was used. And again, he wrote down that he thought Oscar had a gun. So we need to be very clear and always remember that he pulled his gun out in the act of believing that Oscar had a gun. His intent was never to use his taser.
Yes, sir.
As you know, I will go on to talk about that. You know, and to press it with his history. You know, Johannes Mesny had a history of confrontation with young black men within his 2.5 years on that BART platform. His first year on that Black BART platform, he had an incident with a young brother, you know, black again. Within the 6 months he was there, less than 6 months after that, he had another incident, a police brutality arrest. It was about 7 months after that he arrested another brother he had a confrontation with. These are all young black men, all almost approximately 22 years old. Now, we're talking about his third incident, and he was reprimanded for how he handled that particular arrest. But that was hidden in his OPF, his personal folder, where the jury wasn't privy to know that. His fourth incident, as we know, happened 45 days before Kenneth Carruthers, before Oscar was murdered, who was Kenneth Carruthers, who he had beat up, who had filed a civil lawsuit against him. That was 45 days before he murdered Oscar. In that complaint that Kenneth Carruthers filed, BART, as you know, claimed that they lost that complaint and therefore was not totally aware what happened in that particular case. That night that Oscar was murdered, while he Johannes Mesley and his partner, Wolfington, was at the West Oakland BART station. They got a call that a young man had a gun. They went upstairs. A young brother did take off running. He jumps off the platform, hits the ground, and incapacitates himself. They pat him down. It was alleged that there was a gun some feet away from him. They alleged that it was his. As they handcuffed him and, you know, bringing in medical aid, they get a call that there's a black and Mexican gang fight on a Fruitvale BART train, or a train headed to the Fruitvale BART station. And as you know, they testified that when they received that call, they thought they were going into combat. You know, they felt that their lives, they might not make it home. You know, they really gave this really gory picture of how they felt when they hit that platform or was heading to the platform. Of course, Mesley came up on the platform, had his taser out immediately, pulled it out a second time. Oscar took a picture with his taser in his hand. We do know racial epithets were used before Oscar was thrown down to the ground. And then, as we know, as Oscar crisscrossed his hands behind his back to be handcuffed, Johanna Mesley stands up, shoots him, and then claims that he thought he had a gun. You know, and I wanted to say all that so that we can see that he had a pattern, a history of dealing with
us. Yes.
In an abusive way, you know, but the jury wasn't privy to that. But the jury was fair enough to see that there was some problems, because they actually came back with a guilty verdict on the involuntary manslaughter, but they also came back with a guilty verdict on the gun enhancement. The gun enhancement is an automatic 10 years. So we knew at the minimum with the 2-year involuntary manslaughter and the 10-year gun enhancement, he was going to do 14 years. But Judge Robert Perry, the same judge that set over the Rampart case, the gang of police officers that was on that task unit in L.A., that sold dope, beat up people, framed people, that same judge claimed he erred in his instructions to the jury. And when he claimed that he erred with his instructions to the jury, he became the 13th juror, and he took that gun enhancement off the table and then gave him 2 years with double time served, where he would only have to do 11 months. But he also added with him gave him what you call non-revocable parole, which is a piece of legislation that came out, I think, on January 21st of 2010. And what that piece of legislation did for felons like him was they had to meet certain criteria, but the judge was the final person to make the decision whether they can actually be put on it or not. What it does is that they allowed it a felon, upon his exit from jail, because Johannes Mesley only went to jail, he didn't go to prison, to have 1 year without any contact with the police. If he has success in 1 year without having any contact with the police, the felony automatically falls off his record, and he is thereby given his gun back, which happened. And as you know, of course, he reapplied at the BART station for his position back. And we protest that, spoke real loud. BART saw that it would really create a real public relation issue, and didn't hire him. But he is employed with a company, for what I've discovered just recently, in San Pedro, carrying a gun on his side, doing some form of security work, more or less like, much more to a degree than what George Zimmerman was doing. He works with a company that is run by basically police officers. So he has a gun in his hand. So I wanted to make sure we understood that this criminal justice system, this racist criminal justice system, helped him have the freedom that he has today by design. You know, and so, you know, and so, you know, I wanted to bring us to that point and then make some comparison to the Trayvon Martin case versus the Oscar Grant case. We know both of them were profiled. We know both of them was on the phone talking to their Oscar to his girlfriend, as you know, Trayvon was talking to his girlfriend. We know in both incidents, racial epithets were used. As we know, right before Oscar was murdered, he was, you know, as we know, racial epithets were used. In Oscar case, we had video. In Trayvon case, we had audio. The chief of police of the Bark Department resigned. Chief Lee of Stanford Police Department resigned or retired. District Attorney had Tom Orloff over the Alameda County District Attorney Office, the same district attorney that prosecuted Huey Newton, decided to take an early retirement. He needed to retire anyway. But also the Seminole County District Attorney head that first had the case had to resolve herself from the case because of some personal issues. And I don't know the details, but I do know the initial one had to resolve themselves from the case, from the actual you know, case itself. You know, and I say all this to say that if we really take a look across the country at these particular cases that come pretty close to Oscars and Trayvon, we will see a similar pattern that goes on with every single one of them.
Right.
You know, and until we as a people not just protest, but construct boycotts in ways, for instance, with Florida, you know, I really believe that we need to boycott blind orange juice or some of one of their exporting resources that bring them income for a year. And as people, we have to be committed to that to affect them financially, because had it not been for the ILWU Local 10 of the Longshoremen Union here in the state of California, shutting down the ports on the West Coast, causing the state of California billions of dollars, and, of course, you know, people coming out, speaking to the very issue and being angry about it, we would not know or have the history that we have with Johannes Mensley going to jail. We didn't get no victory. We just made history, you know. But there are some things that we have to do as a community in order to hopefully bring some form of change of these heinous acts that is happening with us in our communities. You know, I don't want to be too long-winded, but I think I know you asked also talk about the movie.
Yes,
of course, yes, of course, Ryan Coogler is from the Bay Area, Oakland. He was here in the Bay Area the night Oscar was murdered, and he felt it to his heart. And he just knew in his mind that he had to do something. And so, of course, when he went back to USC, he began to think about how he could do this. And, of course, he then presented the idea to Forrest Whitaker, who in turn called us as a family and shared that he was interested in doing this film, but he had a director that he had sent down for us to meet. Of course, we were able to meet Ryan Coogler and discuss, and he shared his vision on how he wanted to, you know, bring about Oscar to the world. And we really fell in love with Ryan Coogler because he was giving us a voice to share with the world the humanity of Oscar. Because one of the most devastating things that any family can experience in the courtrooms when it comes to dealing with this racist criminal justice system is the demonization of your loved one.
Yeah.
And you have no voice to contend against that, except for what you can say to the news media if they even play it. You know, the good things that we wanted to share about Oscar, nobody really got to know about it because nobody would talk about that. But they'll talk about him going to jail. You know, they'll talk about him maybe smoking some weed, you know, like in Trayvon case. You know, the criminalization, the demonization, and even demoralizing our loved one is a heinous act that goes on a repetitive basis whenever it comes to one of us being in this racist court proceedings seeking justice. You know, and so when Ryan shared that he was going to give us a voice to share with the world who Oscar was, you know, we invited him into our home. He sat with us, became part of the family, you know, and began to do his study. And not only did he do his study with us as a family, he, of course, studied his daughter, his fiance, Oscar's friends, his workplace, even the school teachers, even the time that he did go to jail. And his San Quentin time was nothing like they tried to make it. He did spend 30 days in San Quentin for an evaluation because he was foolish enough to take a gun charge for a friend of his who had already been in trouble with a gun. You know, and so, you know, that's painful, but that's the reality of it. He never got in trouble before he was 18, and then he decides to ride with some friends. There was a gun in the car, and, of course, him never being in no trouble was the best candidate because they knew that he wouldn't have to be locked up forever, and that's how that worked. And so he had to experience that, and that was utilized to demonize him, criminalize him, and, of course, to make him look like he should have been killed. And, and that's very, very painful. So all we've done is always tried to share with the world that what was said, how it was said, and what was done to us was wrong, and that, Oscar had some humanity about him. And so as he developed this movie and brought it to the big screen, as we know, at the Sundance Film Festival, it won the Grand Jury Award as well as the Best Dramatic Film. It went over to France. It won, the Best Regard Movie. It was the number one movie over there in France. It has taken off because he focused on the humanity of us as young men. The part that has been demonized about us by this racist criminal justice system. Because we have heard the minister share it with us, and I know that the United States is only 5% of the world's population, but yet has 25% of the prison population. You know, one quarter of the prison population lies right here in the United States. In that prison population is 2.4 million men locked up. Over 70% of those men locked up are black and brown men. You know, we have 7.5 million men by Michelle Alexander sharing with us through her book, The New Jim Crow, Mass Incarceration in Time of Color Blindness. 7.5 million men have something to do with this racist criminal justice system by way of a monitor, either weekend jail time, or of course probation, parole, or some kind of house arrest. And then we know the effects of that, of course, affects our voting rights, our employment rights, our housing rights. I mean, in our aspect, we're basically put back in bondage once we come in contact with this racist criminal justice system. You know, and so for Trayvon to go through the trial that he went through, we already knew what was going to happen. We already knew that by design he was going to get off because the district attorney office, the office that represented us in seeking justice for us, didn't fully prosecute Johannes Mezzali. And even if he did, we had a judge that sat there and took it off the table anyway. You know, and the same with the district attorney that prosecuted George Zimmerman. They gave a sorry, trial in representing the family. You know, and so there was no way that they could prove second-degree murder was an overcharge anyway. But yet we were hoping that they would at least get the voluntary manslaughter because they couldn't get involuntary manslaughter because he admitted that he shot him. You know, but their prosecution was so weak that, of course, there was nothing left before George Zimmerman to walk. And then, of course, the ultimate element was the fact that they had a jury that were of white women that were sold on the idea of an angry black man or black child and thereby had to convict him. Well, not convict him, but convict Trayvon Martin is what they did and let George Zimmerman go free.
Well, you said it perfectly that all the way back to impaneling the jury, as they say, the die was cast. In the wake of the verdict, there are things coming to light that are manifesting a mistrial. Even though you cannot try Zimmerman again in the same court on the same charges because of double jeopardy, now we need to look at, as you're saying, Brother Bobby, we have to look at the prosecution, the court, the police, law enforcement, the state of Florida. The juror who decided to go public and who is married to a lawyer who had a book deal in place was very open in ignoring all facts that were presented. And what you saw through her conversation is that the jury revised the law to give Zimmerman an acquittal. And of course, as you just indicated, the prosecution's case was horrendous. And we have to all keep in mind that it took 6 weeks and a national protest just to get an arrest of George Zimmerman, during which time evidence was compromised. And we'll move into a discussion and include the callers with that. But I appreciate so much your assessment, and this is what we have to continue to bring home. And ultimately, we're going to have to recognize the futility of trying to live with these people, because this just presents itself time after time. And frankly, as we know, there are so many anonymous young people, particularly young black males, but there are even women, there are children who are dead, buried in the ground, and we don't even know who they are because they did not have the family, the strong family support that Oscar and Trayvon had, families that have been relentless in forcing the light on the murder of their child, their family member. But this continues to happen over and over. We can go back to Emmett Till. We can go back to 1555. But the point is, as you're saying, we got to move forward, and we've got to become proactive. And I am all in favor of pervasive economic boycotting, but this time when we boycott, we need to start taking the monies and the funds that we save and doing as Minister Farrakhan has asked us to do, and pull our resources so that we can build our own economic independence. Because at the end of the day, we're really the only people on the earth, as one of my guests said on the show a few months ago. You know, we're the only people that seek political representation but don't put an economic base under it. And so all the way through to our own president, we were so effective in this country politically that we did that which was inconceivable. We put a black man in the Oval Office, and what has it gotten us?
Well,
our condition has declined.
That's right.
And so, Brother Bobby, you are more than welcome to stay on with us as long as you're available. We lengthened the show to 2 hours, and we're already down to an hour and 10 minutes. And I can't thank you enough for giving us, as you said, filling in those gaps on the facts surrounding Oscar's murder and the pattern of behavior of the murderer, just like George Zimmerman. And of course, none of his character and past behavior got in the case either. And one of the things was the prosecution chose to introduce all of the interviews that Zimmerman did with the police, the videotaped interviews, all of his audio statements, so that it was not necessary for him to take the stand
more
and explain himself. And you know, this defense lawyer who is an overt racist himself. Both of the main defense lawyers, very condescending in their language,
yes,
and attitude, dismissive of this child's death. But Mark O'Meara, the lead defense lawyer, he said, if the prosecution had not put all those tapes in, he would have been forced to put his client on the stand.
Come on.
You know, so we have to ask ourselves now, are we really looking at incompetence? I don't think so. I don't think Angela Corey is incompetent.
Come on.
But
well, you know, I call it dumb poker. You got four people in a poker game, and your defense lawyer, the prosecutor, and the judge is all in cahoots, and you sitting there alone. You're gonna lose every time, and that's the way we've been playing the game with these white people. They're cheating. They are cutting deals behind the scenes.
Yes. In front of
okay,
them.
And we sit there losing all the time. I'm tired of playing dumb poker. We need to pull out of this game and set up a new one.
We do.
Right.
Yeah. As long as we function in this paradigm, you're right. We need to get up from this table.
I wanted to add this to Dave. Ramali Graham, who was a young man that was killed in the Bronx, New York, of course, it was video. You know, behind this shooting, not so much the shooting itself, but what they alleged was that he was running from the police. He ran into his house. He had a gun and all that. But he walked to his house. It was on camera. He went into his house, and then all of a sudden the police come around the corner banging on his door. They get in through the back door. They go up. They go into his bathroom. They shoot him and kill him. Anyway, the grand jury indicted the officer that killed Ramali Graham. They, of course, went back and forth to court for almost a year and a half just to hear the grand jury, just to hear the judge say that he has to throw the case out because the prosecuting team, erred in one of their motions and that he couldn't let it go forward. So now they're hoping that they reconvene the grand jury and find this officer liable for, again, to be charged for the murder of their son. But I said all that to say that I believe, too, that they're working in cahoots. Because
yes,
how can they allow them to go back and forth to court for over a year and a half and then all of a sudden decide that they messed up at the beginning of the process and he couldn't let it go any further? You know,
yes,
in our case, it was the same thing in Trayvon Martin's case, the same thing. What was so terrible about ours is that Judge Robert Perry made sure that the media would not be able to allow this to be transparent to the world because he kept the cameras out. Had he allowed the cameras in there, there's no way in the world we wouldn't have been subjected. Well, I'm not going to say that, you know, because we know these devils, they don't have no shame about themselves. But the racism that we were subjected to when he told us this is not, you know, I'm talking about Oscar case, this is not about race. My God, we gave you a black president. It can't be about race. He told us in that courtroom, we gave you a black president. Now why are you shouting racism? You know, that's some of the stuff that we had to deal with. You know, they called the silhouette of Oscar's body because they made the argument that the bullet went in at an angle showing and proving that he was resisting arrest. And for no rhyme or reason, they decided to call the silhouette KKK. And all the reporters and everybody went in awe and put their head down, but nobody wanted to report that. You know, and so the only way I get it out there is I have to talk about it. You know,
yes,
that's just some
yes
pieces of the racism we experienced in that courtroom.
And to your point about the judge in the Bronx murder, the judge in Oscar's case, the judge in Trayvon's case, this is a system that is built on a concept and philosophy of white supremacy and black inferiority. Laws do not produce attitudes, beliefs, or views. The attitudes, beliefs, and views of the dominant power produce the laws. And so they will, when necessary, rewrite the law in progress. You know, as Dr. Ridge is saying, it's like being in a card game with a card shark, and they're actually changing and manipulating what
That's
you
right.
thought were the rules as you sit there. I mean,
right.
see,
right.
We're going into in-your-face gangsterism. You know, back in the Emmett Till days, they would wait until nighttime and put a hood on.
Come on.
To do this stuff. Now they're doing it in our face. Now we're catching them on video. The cameras couldn't be in the courtroom in Oscar's case because you all had this on videotape. You
mm-hmm.
see? And so each
right.
judge creates or manufactures lies and deceptions that are appropriate to the circumstance. This
Please.
Woman that sat over Zimmerman's trial, number one, she blatantly excused black jurors, one after the other. There weren't that many to begin with. She would not allow the prosecution to use the adjective racial in front of profiling.
Right.
Now, how can you do that? That's invading the province of the trier of fact. Racial profiling is a legal term, and it's also a subjective determination. You can't say to the charging party, you can't go in front of the trier of fact and accuse this man. It's an accusation. It is up to them. So she made them take out racial and just say profiling, but she let the defense put in this tape of a white woman describing a burglary
right.
of her home that was committed by a black male and talk about hiding in the closet with her child and talking about her appreciation of George Zimmerman creating a neighborhood watch volunteer corps, which it appears he seemed to be the only member of, by the way.
Come on.
You know, and it just goes on and on. They charge him with murder two, but they did not present a murder two case. They had a good opening statement, and then they quickly collapsed.
They blew it.
They
right.
blew it. They blew it.
Right.
So all of this shows the utter, I can't call this a waste of our time. We've reached a point, okay, I could see us doing this in the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, the 70s even. But now in 2013, we've got to wake up and accept whether we like it or not and overcome this emotional attachment to the slave master and accept the truth of what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad has said.
That's right.
This is not going to happen. All of this, Negro talking heads all over the TV. We need to have a conversation. No, we don't need to have no conversation.
Mm-hmm.
You can't converse with a person who thinks nothing of you.
What?
This
right.
juror said, if Trayvon, she said he quote, he played a huge role in his own
right.
death.
Right.
She
Walking
said,
Wild Black.
Yes.
Yeah.
She said he should have, and she said Trayvon, instead of, now listen to this language, instead of doing whatever he did.
Whatever.
Well, wait a minute. You're the trier of fact. What did you conclude he did?
He did, right. Right.
This, we ain't standing on the corner talking about whatever.
Come on.
So you acquitted Zimmerman, and you don't know what Trayvon did or didn't do, and then you say he should have gone home? This is Jim Crow. This is slavery. You're a nigga, are you looking at me?
Come on.
You looked a white man in the eye?
Come on.
Is Mobile, Alabama in 1911. Why is this black man hanging from a tree? This nigga had the nerve to ask for a receipt when he paid for something.
Come on.
Right.
You know, so...
You see,
they're trying to put us to the point that
we are so frustrated that we're willing to take the law out in our own hands. They want us... Somebody said, what should be done by my cousin? What should be done to Zimmerman? I don't want nothing done to Zimmerman. I mean, he's proved America's case. Okay? America is doomed. But what they want us to do is to get frustrated and to act violently in retaliation. And I thank Allah that we didn't do that, and pray Allah that this weekend when we do the peaceful protest, that we don't respond when they spray us with pepper spray and shoot us with rubber bullets, because they're going to do it, because they already did it in California. Shot people with rubber bullets in their face.
That's right, already.
Already. So people be careful, because they intend to push this, because this is one of their last games to play. They already got the guns waiting to shoot us down. They just need an excuse. However, I say boycott Florida. Now, I don't mean leave.
Yeah.
Never go back. It's going to be flooded over by water in a couple of years anyway. Just pull out of Florida, couple of Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi. We need to start determining what areas that we want to claim and pull out of hell and go and build heaven.
And you know, we got to remember, and I'm going to the phones after this. We're going to start in Dallas with Brother Muhammad. We have to remember and know our history and not get nervous. This ain't the first time at the rodeo. We've made an exodus before, because as Isabel Wilkerson wrote in The Warmth of Other Suns, between 1915 and 1970, 6 million black people left the South and went to the North. Not that the North was some bowl of cherries by any stretch. It was another hell, but it was maybe one inch above the hell that they were leaving. But we know and understand that there comes a time when you have to make an exodus. And I think we have to do that. We have to start by, number one, withholding our money.
That's right.
Why are we spending $1 trillion in the American economy every year? Why are we going to Disney World and South Beach?
Come on.
You know, I enjoyed the NBA finals as much as anybody. But that sport and play, it's a respite from life. We had to face real life, because all of this, from Eric Holder on down, every black man I have seen and heard from this week has experienced this. Eric Holder said he was pulled over in Washington, D.C. when he was a federal prosecutor. The executive vice president of NBC News, who's black, which I never knew until today, was on this evening on Chris Matthews. He was in a store and was at the cash register checking out when all of a sudden he felt metal against the back of his head. A voice said to him, "Don't turn around or I will shoot you." What had happened, the clerk had accidentally put their foot on a button to say they're being robbed.
My God. Accidentally.
The store had all kinds of people in it, but everybody was white. And the police went right to his head. And he said had he not frozen and put his hands up, he knows he would have been dead. He initially thought he was being robbed. But it was the police. The executive vice president of NBC.
Wow.
You know, so there are no, there is no place you can climb to. Henry Louis Gates went through it at Harvard. He just knew he was exempt.
Come on.
None of us are exempt. The president of the United States has to come on TV and show his birth certificate.
Come on.
After being in office to prove he is a, quote, American. Are we serious? Do we really want to go back to the Voting Rights Act? Well, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, those that want to stay can stay. But we, just like Jews have dual citizenship in Israel and America, we have to have a place of respite.
That's right.
So that Oscar can celebrate New Year's without getting shot in his back. So that Trayvon can go to 7-Eleven without getting shot in his back. So a young brother in New York can come home and turn a key in the door of his own apartment without getting 41 bullets in his body.
Come on.
So that a black couple in Cleveland don't get 137 rounds shot into their car this past December, like Bonnie and Clyde. So Martin Luther King doesn't get a bullet to the head at 39, Malcolm at 39. All because of the paranoia of white racism. And that's what we got to understand. We can never win.
That's right.
Zimmerman thought he was being threatened. This cop in Oakland thought he was being threatened. What can we do about what a psychopath thinks? You can't vote that away.
Come on.
You can't protest that away.
Come on.
So we're going to Dallas to Brother Muhammad, and he's been on for such a long time. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Muhammad. Welcome to Elevated Places.
Wa alaikum salam, beloved.
Good to have you on. Thank you for your patience, brother.
Thank you. The law is stand your ground, comma, unless you're black or brown.
Come on. Yes, sir.
See, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan taught us, sight is not with your two eyes. Sight is your ability to perceive reality correctly. Zimmerman is the in that awareness and with that divine piece of wisdom, Zimmerman is not on trial. Like you and everybody else just articulated, black American Negroes, niggas, and Uncle Toms are on trial.
Come on.
They've been proven, this trial proved that we're still slaves and hostages to white people. See, people treat you like you treat yourself. And we enjoy hating each other, disrespecting each other, and killing each other. I've heard sisters say their favorite show on TV was First 48, where black males are killing each other. And that's entertainment to them. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan taught us, you remember, he was teaching on Tawana Brawley. And he said, now when a white woman is raped, they tore down Central Park and half of New York trying to find the raper. But the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said that when Tawana, a black female, is raped, oh, that's no big deal. The white man says, I saw an animal and I wanted a piece. Because Article 1, Section 2, Paragraph 3 of the Constitution of the United States to this day calls us three-fifths of a human being.
Say it.
So Zimmerman's not on trial. See, black people are on trial, and this is not going to change until blacks are ready to listen to the voice of God when he speaks through the mouth of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. That's the right. message that they put out, oh, it's legal to lynch a nigga whenever we feel like it. And like one of the ministers said, white people and white devils are not going to change. We are the ones that have to change.
Exactly.
It's another Emmett Till. Revelation 18:5 in the Bible says, come out of her, my people. America. Wrong. America is an acronym. Attack, murder, enslave, rape, incarcerate, conquer Africans. The saddest part about this whole trial is we love to keep repeating this, because if you keep doing something, like my uncle taught me when I was a teenager, if you keep going into it, you must like it.
That's right.
The old African proverb says, when something's wrong with the fruit, don't get mad at the fruit. Go check the tree.
Mm-hmm.
The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan has taught us, God allows our children to die to let us know it's something wrong with the parents.
Come on.
And what's wrong with the parents is we are being punished by ourselves for accepting integration. When one man, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, told us that integration is a hypocritical trick, and the white man is pulling you closer to him so that he can slice your throat.
Come on.
The Bible says that though you are dead, you too will live again if you believe in this one man. It said one man. It didn't say a whole bunch of preachers. And there's only one preacher who warned about, who said that the black man, your problem is you've been destroyed. He warned about tornadoes and hurricanes destroying America. This man had the second greatest event in the history of the world called the Million Man March, where people are called to atone for their sin.
That's right.
He did a series of lectures saying, stop the killing. He did a series of lectures called Let Us Make Man. He told us that separation is the best and only solution. And black America catches hell and will continue to catch hell for one reason and one reason only. And that's because they do not listen to the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. They do not respect the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Brother Muhammad.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. So, I mean, you, every last thing you're saying is a pearl. I haven't
That's
heard
right.
a single word wasted. You know,
That's
and
right.
I'm only cutting in because we have so many callers. But
I'm
taking notes from what you're saying.
I'm just trying to be a reflection of you.
Oh my! No! I'm going to be a reflection of you. You'll hear some of this Sunday in my lecture because you're going to bring it.
And tell your daughter her words inspired me and touched me and elevated me when you quoted them.
Great. Yes, sir. I will tell her that.
Ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
All
no disrespect.
All praise to Allah. Thank you, Brother Muhammad.
Yes, ma'am. Assalamu alaikum.
Sister Ava.
Yes, sir.
I just wanted to jump in one second because
sure.
Brother Abel in Chicago wanted me to bring up this particular point. As we listen to the clip of Minister Farrakhan, you know, the white man removing the face of civility and really showing his true colors, as you said, you know, he used to put on hood back in slavery to cover up who they were, but now they're just outright doing it. So he brought up a point to say, why is this considered racial profiling when racial profiling is used when you're saying authority figures are racially profiling somebody, whether it be law enforcement, sheriff, police. Zimmer was no law enforcement. So why use racial profiling instead of what it was, a hate crime? And what he revealed of himself is
right.
that he hated a black man. It had nothing to do about racial profiling because you had no authority to even give a profile.
That's right. That's right.
So
yeah, beautifully said.
Straight up hate. So, Brother Abel, you know, Chicago, you want me to bring up points of why are they bringing up racial profile when it was straight up accusing him of a hate crime?
That's right.
So you're exactly right. And see, now, unfortunately for President Obama, you know, he has run and run and run away, and this is at his doorstep now. He is not going to escape the Zimmerman verdict. He is going to have to take a stand one direction or the other. And this whole issue of racial profile, Brother Abel's exactly right, that is within the province of the government. And so this is why you're going to have to, when I say you, I'm really saying the Obama administration is going to have to take action. They're trying to get out of it already by having people all over the media say how difficult it is to sustain a charge of a hate crime based on race. Every time black people are in need of justice, you immediately are presented with all of the obstacles to it and how difficult. Just like reparations. It wasn't hard to pay the Japanese. It wasn't hard to pay the Jews. They're still getting paid. You know, but when it comes to black people, how would we do it? How would we know? First of all, I didn't do it. My great-grandfather did it. There's always a problem. Well, go on and bring the daggone charge. Send the feds to Zimmerman's, wherever he is, and send 20 cars, put the cuffs on him, and lock him up. And at the arraignment, let his lawyer get him out, since he's all over the place daring anybody to come at him. What are we talking about? You got this man on 46 phone calls talking about black males. That going back to Uncle Bobby's point, the judge wouldn't allow those calls into evidence. She selected a few calls. Totally out of her province as a judge. But that's an excellent point, Brother Terrence, from Brother. Brother Malik is holding. He has a comment. Assalamu alaikum,
yes,
Brother
alaikum.
Malik.
Salam, Dr. Ava, Dr. Ridgely, Brother Terrence, Brother Bobby, from the panel.
Islam.
Yes,
sir.
I was looking at when I was observing the Zimmerman verdict. I mean, I've never seen the tape that Zimmerman did when he was explaining what had happened.
Yes, sir.
And as I observed him, you know, I looked at him. I'm from the streets. I did time in the joint. And
yes,
looking
sir.
At Zimmerman, he's soft, you know what I'm saying? He's not a tough guy,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And one of the mistakes, I believe, and I'm not playing devil's advocate fully, but they didn't have to really play Trayvon as a little. He was not really a little guy. See, black men,
correct.
He's a tall brother. There's a 7-Eleven video of the brother right before he died. He's a pretty tall brother, and black men, they can be made 150, 160, but they're really strong. Don't think because a brother ain't buff, he's not strong. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
Right.
And yeah, that's true. That's true. They didn't have to make Trayvon a child. See, what they
like
were doing that to make us look deceptive, like we're trying to run a game. No,
right.
Trayvon
right.
is a tough dude. And George
right.
Zimmerman, he's holding. He's carrying the piece. He's a little cocky. And many police officers and guys, and street cops that really understand the game, they saw straight through Zimmerman. Dude, you mouthed off, you got your backside spanked, and you was lucky enough to get that gun on Trayvon. And see, what happened was, and I saw in his video, the thing that he could not explain was how he got that gun out while Trayvon is on top
yes.
of him, beating his brains out.
Yes,
now,
the
thing that's helping Zimmerman, Trayvon did put a whooping on him. I mean, I'm sorry, he bust that dude up. And it's coming out now that Trayvon was a good fighter. In fact, his big brother wanted him to teach him how to fight. But that's nothing to run from. We don't have to run from that. That's not, you know what I'm saying, because Trayvon was not a troublemaker. Trayvon is not starting any trouble in the hood. He there was nothing in his demeanor that said he wanted trouble. We got the evidence of Zimmerman on the phone talking tough, blah, blah, blah. It's on the call. So it's using deductive reasoning power. He's talking tough on the phone. Now, eventually, him and Trayvon see each other. And then if you look at his explanation to the cops on his video, he's trying to play soft. He's trying to play nice guy. Oh, Trayvon asks him, do you got a problem? Oh, no, I don't have a problem. Trayvon is like, dude, you do got a problem because you're following me. So you got to really look at, he's lying about the actual exchange, what really happened when they faced each other. And I give Trayvon his props. Trayvon probably whooped him like he should, because I'm from the street. I know dudes, man, especially this little Zimmerman dude. That dude is a chump, man, but he's got a little mouth on him, he's a little racist. I can see his little ways.
Yeah, he's a coward. He's a coward.
And what happened?
Hater.
But see, what happened was, yeah. But see, he's carrying a gun, so he's got a little cockiness in him because he's holding. And the cops are on the way, and I think he just underestimated the situation. And before he knew it, Trayvon was all over his. Man, I don't even want to say the words. But what happened was, he got lucky enough. Trayvon got up off of him because the bullet wound was clearly a stand-up shot. He was standing and he popped him. You know what I'm saying? He was able to, Trayvon probably let him up or whatever, because he was screaming help or whatever. Trayvon might have let him up. And then he got a range on Trayvon, and that's when he said, I'm going to kill this nigga. In fact, in his mind, he said, once Trayvon really got to putting it on him, he already had his mind made up he was going to shoot Trayvon. Once he got his gun, once he was able to get his hand on that gun, his mind was made up, and that's what the cops, one of them cops saw that. They saw straight through Zim and said, no, dude, you got into a fight. He was lucky enough to get your pistol, and you had your gun on him, and you popped him. And you had
Trayvon. Well, you know,
I
said on another show that, you know, rather than let the defense portray Zimmerman's walkthrough with the cops as a display of innocence, it was a clear, in-your-face showing to us of the camaraderie between the police and Zimmerman. They were doing a walkthrough to help him put his story together.
Exactly.
To say, oh, he talked to the police without a lawyer. His father is a lawyer. He went back there to get the story together, as you say. And I believe, too, first of all, it was shown, common sense dictates there is no way this man reached behind his back if the gun was in the holster, in the waist. And if you think, as you said, because this dark, shadowy figure is frightening enough for you to call 911, okay, and you only got out your car to look at an address, and you don't know where he went, but you're strapped, what is the point of having a gun if you don't take it out?
Exactly.
When you feel there's a threat in the environment. He had that gun out, I believe, and like you said, that this happened from a standing position. But you had a jury that was selected at the advice of a multi-million-dollar jury consultant. You got to look at the money also.
Wow.
You know how many millions of dollars Zimmerman's defense cost?
Wow.
He had the most expensive lawyers, the most expensive. They had the top forensic expert in the country, the top jury consultant who said he wanted an all-female jury. He told that was in the newspaper today. He said he wanted women because they would empathize with him. And what did that white woman say? George was trying to protect the community. So now we're back to the Scarlett O'Hara white virginity, deep south delusion of white people. George had to defend himself.
That was an OJ payback.
Am I still on, Dr. Avery?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, but, you know, but see, the thing, you know, I'm not going to speculate on Zimmerman. I mean, when I see him, he's not a threat. That dude is nothing. But, you know, what this really brought up was the system itself, you know, as far as
exactly.
The whites, how whites are reacting. You know, the common whites. It's really, when the minister, he didn't really directly talk about this over the last few days, but he said all things work for the good, even though it seems evil. And
exactly.
What this is really, with Allah's allowing this to really bring out the hidden racism, the hidden white supremacist structure, and how they all work in cahoots. And my nephew is like 20 years old, and you know he grew up in a white neighborhood. My sister, you know, they're in Northridge, California. But I'm looking at my little nephew now though. But he's struck now. He got a little white girlfriend. But I went on his Facebook stage. He said, "Oh man, it's pricking his conscience now." So he's finna look at that white girl. He got a little differently now.
Well, it's so bold.
He's saying,
but see
the beauty of this
right.
is. When I was driving around, I could see in black folks' faces, like, you know, you can kind of see, like, you know what, it's on. We got to really, really realize some reality now. And all this is Allah just preparing us for that exodus.
That's
when
right.
the minister, you know, because you can't really deal with this white supremacy as 13th Amendment U.S. citizen. You have to deal with
right.
it as a sovereign nation. You know,
exactly.
under Allah, God, which Master Farah Muhammad said, this is a nation. And when we come to Washington, D.C., if it be the will of Allah, the next year, and the minister got 10 million strong with him, that's the next phase that this has to get to. We are a nation in a nation. We're not going to deal with any law. We have to set up territory. What he wrote in Torchlight of America, what the government must do, helping us set up land in Africa with our brothers. This has nothing to do with trying to make white folks right. That's a dead end. That's never going
that's
to work.
Right.
And Master Rob
yes,
Muhammad.
Sir.
And see, the thing that's,
we gotta,
the thing that's
Brother
on Malik, our mind.
I got to move on. I got a
okay.
pile of calls here. But,
let's,
you know, my callers are such powerful teachers that I hate it when I stop you because you're just bringing such profound information. But
oh, yeah, yes,
thank
ma'am. No problem,
so
man.
Much. And you're right. You know, we have to, now, I mentioned that at our Labor's conference this week, we have to come as a peer, and from the political sense, I mean we're above a peer, but politically speaking,
right.
In terms of territory, government, we have a flag, we have everything except land, which the Honorable Elijah Muhammad pushed first and foremost. Why land? Because you really will never have a true independent economy unless you have land, and that's why we have Dr. Rizzi on this team, because we were deceived into disconnecting from land ownership and producing our own food. So thank you so much. We're going to go on. We have Dr. Salam is on the line. Dr. Salam, welcome to Elevated Places.
Yes, assalamu alaikum, family.
Well,
Dr. Rizzi, Brother Terrence. And Brother Bobby, I got legal pads out here. I'm jotting everything down. I'm sort of
yes,
like
sir.
You, Dr. Ava. I want to approach this thing from a legal standpoint. Firstly,
yes.
this trial and verdict was over before the trial ever started.
Yes, sir.
The attorneys sit down and got their act together. And it was all downhill from that. Let me share with you this Florida Stand Your Ground law. It's in three parts. And Florida was the first to adopt it, and 26 other states now have it. Did you know
yes,
that?
Yes, sir. That's right. Yes, sir, I do.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It states that a person is presented or presumed to have reasonable fear of imminent death or great bodily harm when using defensive force if an intruder has broken into his or her home or vehicle and is justified in using force. It states that a person does not have a duty to retreat if he or she believes death or bodily harm is imminent, and it provides immunity from criminal prosecution and civil action for justifiable use of force. The reason I cited that is because three other states in this 26 is Illinois, Oregon, and Washington, and they have what they call no duty to retreat.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So now let's go I did a little investigation. I don't always investigate the plate, Lieutenant. I sometimes take a break. But I did a little investigation on Zimmerman. In 2005, George Zimmerman was arrested and charged for resisting an officer with violence and battery of a law enforcement officer. Both of these felonies are considered third degree. Now, that's serious. A third degree felony is serious. But due to his desperate attempts, the changes were reduced, charges were reduced to resisting officer without violence. And then the only remaining charge was actually completely waived when he entered into an alcohol educational program. Later on in 2005, George Zimmerman's actually beat his fiance, which is his ex-fiance, and her name was Veronica Zuaza. And she filed a civil motion restraining order alleging domestic violence. And in retaliation, George Zimmerman came back and filed one on her, so nothing was done. And then he was charged again for speeding. And that case was dismissed because the officer who had filed that charge did not show up for court. Now, the reason I cited those things is because George Zimmerman's father, not only as a lawyer, he was a magistrate judge.
That's correct, yes. That's right.
And the number 37 juror, I did some investigation on that, who was white. What she does is volunteer rescuing animals, but she's also married to an attorney.
That's right.
That is a violation. But
yes.
having said all of that, those are the type of things that a lot of people should have looked into. But I promise you, both sides sat and got this thing together. And I believe in my heart, this is just what I believe. Nobody has told me this. I believe that George Zimmerman, in order to join a gang, because he did not have a permit, he did not have any ID on him. Nobody, I did some investigation, nobody on the street where he lived or where he was knew of him doing that work. So somebody has told a damn lie from the beginning.
Well,
so,
that is so insightful and helpful. And there's, I forgot the name of the witness, the prosecution witness that wept on the stand, that testified that it was Zimmerman on top during the struggle, that testified in her mind that was the voice of a person, that was the boy's voice. That's what she testified to. She said she's lived there for 4 years in that community. And
right.
She had no idea that George Zimmerman was any such thing as a neighborhood watch volunteer. And
right.
Also remember, he said he founded it. He organized it. And as I
right.
said earlier in the show, who else is in this?
That's right. Let me tell you what I think is behind all of it, and I think it will make sense. He could not become a law enforcement officer. He could not pass the test. He has a criminal background. His father got 3 felonies waived. The
exactly.
only thing he could do was join a gang, and it was probably skinheads. And if you're going to be a skinhead, the number one order is to,
kill
a
black
a nigger.
That's right.
That's
yeah.
the order of the day. That's
it
what
is.
He did. He got busted, and he's free.
I agree with you 1,000%. And,
that's
and,
all
and
it was.
My husband has maintained, he just said he didn't say, or that his view was, it was a gang ritual, but he did say there's no doubt in his mind Zimmerman was determined to kill a black man. If it hadn't have been Trayvon, it was going to be somebody. He had it in his mind, and when you look at what you're saying is quite plausible.
No doubt in my mind when you look at the area in which he was in. He can't go to the Crips or Bloods. The only thing out in that area, from my research, are the skinheads.
And what else would he want to go to? Yes, sir.
He has nowhere to go. He can't get in school. He can't pass an entrance exam. He can't get can't go to law school. He can't be a police officer. He can't do nothing but what he's about to enter. That's why they have him in a secret place. And those lawyers, I tell you, there's no telling how much money they made for that deceptive intelligence that they laid in front of us. Thank you for listening.
Well, I understand the Coach Koch brothers from New York? They pronounce their name differently from the mayor, the former mayor, Ed Koch, K-O-C-H. They spell their name the same way, but they pronounce it differently. You know, the billionaires that spent $100 million trying to get Romney elected, they have given generously to Zimmerman's defense fund. You know, and as
That's
I mentioned earlier, you know, the experts and the law firm representing him are all multi-million-dollar people, professionals. They charge an arm and a leg to participate or assist or consult. But Dr. Slum, I got to move on. We're down to 20 minutes, and I want to get a sister in
here. Thank you, sister.
But
thank you.
Always, as always, you just, oh my goodness, thank you, callers, for helping me with my lecture for Sunday. I'm taking copious notes, brothers, from the callers. But I want to get Sister Alice in here, and then I'm going to go to Brother Lewis. Sister Alice, assalamu alaikum. Welcome to Elevated Place.
Walaikum salam, ma'am, and Ramadan Mubarak to everyone, the listening audience. I came on the line late, and I just wanted to make reference for those of us who may not know that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan wrote the book Justifiable Homicide, Black Youth in Peril. He also did two lectures at Mas Maryam, Part 1 and Part 2 of Justifiable Homicide, Black Youth in Peril. And in this book and in these lectures, the minister gives us a detailed critique of everything that we're seeing occurring with our black males and the youth as we speak. I'll just briefly quote what he says in the book. According to the dictionary, the term justifiable homicide means whatever is justifiable is excusable. It is excusable because it is justified by the principle of justice. The term homicide means the murder of one human being by another. Whenever you put these two words together, justifiable homicide, there has to be a body of persons in a deliberate process that determines on the basis of fact that the murder of a human being is excusable by the principle of justice. Since we have been in America, we have been under the domination of a power that, during slavery, did not have to justify the murder of our fathers. They didn't have any group of people to look at facts. The slave master had the power of life and death on every black person outside the principle of justice, with no regard for the life of the black male or female that was being put to death. Also, it states, he gives an example of a white historian who wrote, and this is a quote of what this historian said, "It was almost impossible to convict a white man of a crime against a black person. In one Louisiana town, two white men were convicted of murdering a black man. After they were convicted, they rose and walked out of the court after the verdict was announced, and no effort was made to stop them." Just think about that. In 1890, a white man was convicted for the murder of a black man and was fined $5 for the crime. and the judge let it be known that he would not press for collection. So Minister Farrakhan has given us the prescription for every ill that we are currently experiencing and going through as black people. He has piped to us the whole day, and we have not danced. Elijah Muhammad taught us who our enemies are, and we despised and rejected the honorable Elijah Muhammad, and now the black community is paying the price for disbelief. However, I also believe that our separation is our exaltation. So the sooner we can separate from our open enemy, which the honorable Elijah Muhammad has told us who our open enemy is, and Minister Farrakhan has reiterated and continues to expose who our open enemy is, the more he exposes who our open enemy is, the more heat they're going to put on us to instill fear, which is false education or false evidence appearing real. So we have to look at our past, present, and future pharaohs who have worked within this conspiracy to kill the black male, as scriptures say, kill the black male or kill the male and spare the female. Okay, this is biblical scripture that we are currently living through. So until we heed the call and pay attention and carry into practice the teachings of the honorable Elijah Muhammad and his national representative, Minister Farrakhan, we have to unify, as the honorable Elijah Muhammad said, our unity is more powerful than an atomic and hydrogen bomb.
Right.
And this is where we are right now.
Amen.
Okay, this is where we are right now. We have to. We have no other choice but to unite and unify, pool our resources. I hear a lot of the public officials saying, don't take your money out of banks. My thought is, why not? We have black banks. Why come we cannot take our monies out and transfer them over to a black bank base that we can feel more comfortable with? They are giving us a loud and clear message of racism and white supremacy. Very clear. And it has always been and always will be until we decide, first and foremost, to put a stop to our own killing in the black community, which the minister addresses in justifiable homicide, that black people killing ourselves. He can't even, as a general, make a call out to put a stop to white-on-black crime until we put a stop on black-on-black crime within our community.
Thank you so much. Thank you, beloved. Beautiful, beautiful call. Again, the callers are stressing and showing us that boldly that we've got to cut loose this emotional attachment, because that's the only reason we haven't gone on our own. No people, no, not even a species of animal, no living organism and its offspring live in and among predators. You're not going to see zebra living right next to the lions.
That's right.
Because they know that by nature, the lion eats zebra. It's his favorite food. And no amount of education, religion, politics, you can elect a zebra to be the king of the jungle for 4 years. It's not going to change the lion's position. And bigger than that, it's not going to change his basic nature. And I think it was you that said it, Dr. Rizzi, or one of the callers, that they're acting in accord with their nature, they being white people. This that they're doing, that is who they are.
That's right.
We are the ones that are acting other than ourselves by living in and among them. But we're going to get to Brother Lewis before we're down to 15 minutes.
Ramadan Mubarak. Assalamu alaikum. Ramadan Mubarak.
What? Ramadan Kareem.
Yes, ma'am. I hope and pray that during this Ramadan that we are fasting and praying and concentrating more on separation as we begin to open up the dialogue on separation, and hopefully we can start having conferences around separation. I've seen so many signs in this case, Sister Ava, like Brother Trayvon being murdered on February 26th, and
yes,
then the acquittal came during the holy month of Ramadan. And if you notice, a few weeks ago I called in and I said that don't be surprised if these six white women, even though one of them we don't know what she is, but they say she might have a blink of color to her, but these six white women acquitted their brother, George Zimmerman. I think it's a sign in that for us to look at, because in the book of Revelation, it talks about two women. One woman is clad in the sun with the moon at her feet, and the other woman is riding astride a beast with a cup of abomination. And I've asked myself a long time, how could we possibly lose warfare to white people? And it has a lot to do with us lusting behind their women and thinking that their women are better than their men. But I think this time they showed us something. And in closing, hopefully we'll open our eyes, because Pharaoh, when Moses went to Pharaoh, he never said, let my people vote, or let my people have a job, or let my people start businesses, because he realized that you can't start a business under white supremacy and they not destroy your business, basically.
Right.
And to be truthful and honest about it, we're quoting from the law, but the law don't mean nothing. The law is what he wrote. The law is only good as if you have the power to enforce the law. So that don't mean nothing to these people. What we need is we need to get behind the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, promote this show, so that we can have a platform to really start understanding the comprehensive benefits of separation, how to do it, the practical. And I hope we'll start having conferences around that. I want to say just one thing quickly before I get off. In Our Savior Has Arrived, the first chapter, point number 6, which is on page 3, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, he says to us that we, the black nation today, with the knowledge of truth, cannot accept leaders made and offered to us for our guidance. I warn you to no more accept the white man's made chosen Negroes who want to march all over the place. But if we're going to have a real march, we need to be marching for separation and reparations. Other than that, we're wasting our time.
That's right.
Assalamu alaikum. Ramadan Mubarak.
Ramadan Kareem. Beautiful, beautiful call. We're coming down to the final stretch, and I wanted to get a yes, sir. Yes, sir.
I wanted to say something really quick.
Sure.
Again, this is Uncle Bobby. One of the things, the Fruitvale movie, Fruitvale Station, was originally to be released on October the 26th. Or one of those dates. And then the Weinsteins decided to release it, as we know, July the 12th. And so I decided to try to figure out why, and I was reading some articles, and one of their publicists, I'm not sure what his position was, but he said that they wanted to move the movie up because of the zeitgeist of the time. And I'm like, okay, what does this word zeitgeist mean?
Come on.
And so it says the spirit of the age or spirit of the time. It is the intellectual fashion or dominant school of thought that typifies and influences the culture of a particular period in time. Now, the movie was released on the 12th. Trayvon verdict came down on the 13th.
Come on.
Wow.
If we pay attention to what's happening, things are being orchestrated right in front of our eyes.
Come on.
And what a time for them to release the movie and the time for Trayvon verdict to come down. You know, so it's much more to it, as we know, like we always say, we don't wrestle against flesh and blood, but we wrestle against spiritual hosts and principalities, you know, all those unseen things. And so we are dealing, I mean, we had a real major state of time in our lives. you know, especially when it comes to issues that are affecting us as a people. And it's my hope that, you know, that, of course, we begin to really unify ourselves to fight off this demon that is actually destroying us. I just wanted to get that out there because that word zeitgeist really put where we at today, right where we having this discussion about race. This is all orchestrated.
Very good. You see, this is what we're talking about, these Jews who run Hollywood, and they run the mindset of the people. They're playing games with us, and we thank Allah that we got somebody who can play a better game on them now.
Right. And you know, it's interesting that you brought that up because I recall that earlier in the week when they were discussing the verdict, it was said by someone that there had been a request made of the judge.
Right.
And you know how they'll say something once or twice and never say it again. But did you hear about that, Dr. Rizzi? The judge was asking.
Yeah, you told us about that.
Withhold the verdict.
Yep.
It came out on the weekend.
Right.
Issue the verdict on the weekend. Wait until a Monday, because that would indicate that there'd be a lesser probability of violence. Not only did they let it out on a Saturday, it was Saturday night.
Night at the
you're talking about provocation.
No, they blew it. The minister over there blew it. See, look, 10 o'clock, we already had our good clothes on. We had our good clothes on. We had our nails did, our hair did. Ain't nobody going to riot now? Are you crazy? They should have done it on the Monday, so I would have had to go to work Tuesday.
They miscalculated, as
they
always.
They miscalculated.
as the Quran says, they plan and Allah plans.
That's right.
And Allah's the best planners. See,
that's
the technology since OJ and even since Oscar, since 2010, the last 2-3 years, the technology.
Come on.
And you know, you give everybody a cell phone to track everybody, to control everybody, but you're also making people a god of their own little sphere. And what has happened now, you have a rogue juror in this woman. See, she comes out and she's lusting after money and fame with this book deal, with this lawyer husband, as Dr. Salam pointed out. That's a conflict in and of itself. And did you know that almost $40,000 was spent on these white women? Now, you remember when the OJ jury was sequestered, it was like prison. They were in a dormitory type situation. Sequestration is suffering for juries. Nobody wants that because you are cut off from every kind of communication, and they may let you see a film, but it's something they approve of. You know, a DVD but no radio, no television, no cell phones, no computers, no nothing, no iPad. You can't talk to anybody, even each other, about the case, okay? But yet this jury, they went to see the Lone Ranger. They went to a nail spa. They went to the Outback Steakhouse. They had visits. Listen to me good. They had visits from their family and friends. So you are telling me they were not getting the 411 on what was being said? Out in the
world? Come on. Party.
Unbelievable. Now, $33,000 to $40,000, and the first thing out of the, quote, legal experts have said, quote, this is a reasonable amount of money, of taxpayer money. But President Obama gets on Air Force One, and the Tea Party wants to go to war.
Come on.
Do y'all know how much fuel it takes to put that plane in the air. Yeah, the same amount of fuel it took to put Bush in the air, to put Clinton in the air. I mean, as all of you are saying, when are we going to get it? That this is a waste of our time, and as somebody said earlier, one of the callers, we're really being chastised. We're being punished with the death of our children because we keep hanging on long after it's been made clear. It's one thing for our grandparents to fight this war, this battle for voting. But us, we have been given the truth. We know better. And supposedly, if you know better, you do better. But like one brother said, his father or his uncle told him, you know, you keep doing something over and over, apparently you like it. So this is a period of chastisement, brothers and sisters, that we have entered into now. And we need to stop all this. I talk to my son, as I heard a brother say today, I talk to my son, when the police pull you over, turn the light, dome light on, put your hands up in the air. As Francis Cress Welsing said, they are always going to claim the black man was armed. Because, brothers, when they say you're armed, they ain't talking about no gun. They're talking about your reproductive ability. That is why you are always, in their eyes, a threat. Because your presence means the end of their existence. Because if they were to integrate with us, as the minister has taught, we would subsume them.
That's right. And I want to say before you close out, Dr. Ava, that if anybody wants to hear part three of the week-long series of Dr. Ava, tune in Sunday at 10 a.m. NOI.org Central Time, 11 a.m. Eastern. She did Cliff Kelly on Monday and Ripped the House. You done heard the two-hour special tonight. And Sunday, you don't want to miss it. Pack the house. Have a party at your house on Sunday morning to hear part three. Because it is going to be the time and what must be done by Dr. Ava Muhammad, the host of Elevated Places.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you, Brother Terrence. I know I'm on a soapbox. But, Brother Bobby, thank you so much. And your family has our love and our admiration. And know that we stand with you always, and we are so appreciative of you coming out as such an articulate and beautiful, wise, strong spokesperson, not only for your family, but for the black community. And you're always welcome to come on Elevated Places, and I know you're extremely busy, so thank you so much for your time. And to Brother Dr. Rizzi Muhammad, your insight is priceless. Brother Terrence, I'm with Dr. Salam. I think there's a few of you, as I always say. You are so energetic and so beautiful, and just make Elevated Places the success that it is. We definitely could not get this done without Sister LaDonna Muhammad, our IT specialist, Sister Rona Muhammad, our program director, and our research powerhouse, Brother Bobby Muhammad, and of course, last and not least, but the most, as my daughter always says, you're doing the most, but last but not least are the powerful callers and participants, the research that they bring, the teaching that they bring. That's why we have a forum called Elevated Places, so that we can keep our minds and spirit on the highest level. May Allah bless all of us with love and the light of understanding. Watch the time and what must be done at 6 p.m. Central this Saturday, NOI.org. And I look forward to speaking to you from the rostrum of Mariam.
Thank you for listening to and participating in Elevated Places with Dr. Ava Muhammad.
Be sure to join us right here every Thursday at blogtalkradio.com/elevatedplaces. If you have enjoyed our show today, please bookmark Elevated Places as one of your favorites. And remember, we are all preparing for a brand new world.